this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I am thrilled to bring you Vicki Ziegler. And Vicki is considered one of the preeminent family law attorneys in America, and she has been a pioneer in creating some new approaches to traditional divorce litigation. She's an expert in what she calls divorce management, which is an abiding belief and a step-by-step guide that helps family members avoid the emotional trauma and financial devastation that is so often associated with a breakup. By following this path, an astonishing 99% of Ms. Ziegler's cases are successfully settled out of the courtroom. Ms. Ziegler replaces bitterness with empowerment for those who seek her advice in family legal matters. This unique combination of compassion, intelligence, and positive guidance has made her one of the most sought-after legal experts by the media and one of the most recognized experts in her field in the country. She has co-authored legal articles for New York Divorce Magazine and the New Jersey Law Journal. Ms. Ziegler is a frequent guest on the Fox News Channel, CNN, CNBC, Fox Business Channel, Headline News, CBS, and others. She has offered advice and analysis on such high-profile celebrity marriage cases as Yankee slugger Alex Rodriguez, Tiger Woods, Madonna, Larry King, and Sandra Bullock. She continues to dominate radio, the online celebrity community, and print on a weekly basis. She was chosen as one of the top 40 lawyers under 40 by the New Jersey Law Journal and the New Jersey Business News. In 2010, she was recognized as a rising star in Super Lawyers magazine. Several years ago, Ms. Ziegler created and launched her own website, divorcedating.com. The website serves as a resource of information and is dedicated to bringing singles together by helping them get through difficult times and growing from their experiences. Her first book is titled The Premarital Survival Guide, and it will be in bookstores in June, so coming up very soon. Ms. Ziegler is a partner at the prestigious firm of Walder, Hayden, and Brogan, where she specializes in the areas of matrimonial and civil litigation. She received her law degree from Quinnipiac College Law School of Law, and after graduation served as a judicial law clerk to the Honorable Michael K. Diamond, who is the presiding judge in the family part. She has also worked for the Public Defender's Office in Domestic Violence Unit in Rhode Island and is a member of the District of Columbia Bar. She was appointed by the Supreme Court and currently serves as the vice chair on the New Jersey District 11 Ethics Committee for Passaic County. It's a tricky word, but Passaic County. From her legal practice, Ms. Ziegler volunteers time in a New Jersey chapter of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Soup Kitchens in New York City, and Toys for Tots. She provides pro bono work with Partners for Women in Justice, which is an organization that serves as a lifeline for indigent and battered women. And she's currently an adjunct professor at Fordham Law School, where she is teaching a family law course in the fall. So thank you so much for being here, Vicki. I'm just tickled to get a chance to talk with you.
Pleasure to be with you, Kendra.
Great. Well, let's just jump in to the questions. You've got such a fantastic background and really interesting work and some different kind of commentary that you've been doing on, so, as you said, salacious type things in the news, and that's so interesting as well. But before you got into all of that, I'm wondering, as you look back on your life, if there was a specific point that you think you made a turnaround in terms of your work-life balance, or do you always feel like it was something you were pretty good at?
Well, I would hope that I get better at it on a daily basis. And I, as a perfectionist and an A-type personality, I must say I don't think I'll ever have the panacea or that recipe for 100% to equally divide your work and life balance. However, I can tell you that one thing I've been working on very strenuously is trying to make sure that the effort that I give to my work is done during the day, and when I leave work, it's not taken home with me. And I think one thing that really stuck out to me in my life, looking back as you asked, is that when I was working 15-hour days, starting as a young practitioner, a young associate in the firm, I didn't realize that you need to have some self-care and take care of yourself after work. And what I realized was once you start to make that balance and learn what that actually means, it got much easier to be very adept or skilled at work and at home.
Exactly. So when you're just couldn't be more true. When you're looking every day, as you said at the beginning, of that just – making sure that you have that kind of clear delineation between your work and your life, and getting better and better at that. I commiserate as a fellow type A-er, trying to feel like that it's never perfect, never as perfect as I want it to be, but that it's a journey.
Right, it really is, and I don't think there's a way to shortcut it. It's something that you have to accept within you that you can do so much in one day, and when you allocate the proper time and you take the time to prioritize what your goals are for any specific day, you have to always take into consideration that you are a part of that, and not to really beat yourself up that nothing, that not everything gets done in one day. There's always tomorrow. And I think with empowered females that want to strive for success and are really overachievers in a lot of ways, it's something that we have to find peace with ourselves.
It's true. As perfectionists, I think we're particularly susceptible to that sort of self-punishment, inflicting punishment on ourselves when we fall short of what we somehow see as perfect, instead of being gentle with ourselves when we do maybe not get done everything we wanted to get done, or life happens, or as you said, there's that human equation that also is a constant, and we can't beat ourselves up. But as you said, tomorrow is another day, and we can always get it done tomorrow.
Yeah, that's so true. And self-deprecation is something I've read so much about, and really try to make peace with myself that it's okay to not be perfect, not get everything done in a day, and to accept yourself in terms of who you are. And for most of us who are striving to balance life and work, we do more probably than most others in a day in any respect. So I think that, you know what, being a little kinder to yourself and really just being organized and setting out your goals makes a big difference in the overall scheme of balancing your work and life.
And I love how you said that the fact that we're even trying to balance our work and our life probably means that we might be doing more than a lot of other people do, and not that it's a contest or a superiority type of complex, but just to congratulate ourselves sometimes that we got done what we did get done, instead of beating ourselves up for what we didn't get done.
Right, exactly. Focusing on the positives and being grateful and giving yourself a big hug. It's something that has certainly taken me a lifetime to figure out. But once you do get to that point and you climb that mountain and you say, you know what, good job, and you can speak to yourself like that, there's nothing really that could match that euphoria. So I think it's kind of a maturation path that a lot of women need to kind of investigate on their own and look within. And I think every woman has the ability to do that.
I do wonder why we are so hard on ourselves. I mean, part of it maybe does go back to that perfectionism, or the, you know, sometimes I say I have closet OCD. I'm a little obsessive compulsive, detailed sort of in that way. But at the same time, what is it about us? And I think part of it is what makes us attorneys. I mean, there's similarities that we have just in personality type or interest that, so we have those commonalities, but also just in our own personalities or in our upbringing as women, that makes us want to be 120% all the time. And if we only achieve 99%, somehow we feel like we're broken or a failure instead of celebrating that 99%.
It's a great question. I think we're expected to do well in both areas of our lives, and I think when we don't, we feel as though we're disappointing others. And it's more so not for yourself, but really believing that other people may not see you in the highest regard, or may think that you are not as intelligent perhaps in your work environment if you don't handle 50 cases versus 20. So I think it also encompasses pleasing. I think the way I was raised, I was an only child, and I wanted to please my parents, and I wanted to be the best student I could be and the best at anything that I did. And it wasn't about competing with others. It was really about self-competition, competing within myself. And it's funny, I speak to so many friends and people that see me on television or read articles that I've been quoted in, and they always say, you know, Vicki, we always knew you'd be successful. And it's funny, I always felt that I would be successful in anything that I did, but I never understood to what extreme. And I think as you get more empowered and more successful in the sense that people recognize you and know who you are, for me, I become more humble. And I think that's just from spiritual growth and really learning about myself more, and the fact that I'm not here to please anybody but myself, but always at the same time do the best that I can do.
That's, as you said earlier, it's just a mature way, I think, and not, again, it's not a judgment or calling anyone else immature, but it is mature in the sense that it takes a while to get there. It takes some hard self-work and looking at oneself and battling through some of these strong tendencies that we have to try to please others and to try to always be 120% and to try to do all that, and yet come to that place where it's really about pleasing ourselves and knowing, like you said, not just saying, oh, well, I'd be pleased sitting around doing nothing all day, but no, that we're doing the best we can, but that whatever that is, whatever that best is good enough, and that we're happy with ourselves and that we love ourselves for doing that, and not that we don't need to beat ourselves up for not meeting somebody else's expectations because we're so worried about disappointing or offending or worried about what other people think.
Yeah, great point. And there are two big lessons for me in my life, and I think it's a great point to now say it, is somebody very wise once told me that what other people's opinions are about you is none of your business. And when you really understand that concept, that it doesn't really matter what anybody says, they have the right to their opinion, may be hurtful, may be very truthful, and may not be, and you don't have to agree with it or accept it, but it really isn't your business. And I think the second thing for females that are striving for success is to realize and look in the mirror that we're not perfect. And the day I woke up and said, I'm not perfect and I'm proud to not be perfect, the weight was lifted off of my shoulders, I can tell you that. And it's happened to me within the last year or so. I could probably pinpoint where when I would go on TV and if I would mispronounce something or stutter by accident or my earpiece would fall out, you know, you're in front of millions of people. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter. I'm me. And, you know, when you accept that, you are all different things, smart, funny, goofy, you know, contrite sometimes. That makes you, and nobody ever can duplicate it. So for me, really waving my hands and saying I'm not perfect and kind of yelling it out is so cathartic.
Oh, yeah. It feels so good. Oh, and I don't have to try. And I think, I mean, to your point, when you're on TV or you're doing these media appearances, that's what probably makes you likable and what makes people want to listen to you and makes you attractive to these outlets that are engaging with you, is because you're real. I mean, that's the thing. You're not trying to be perfect or pretend you are without human faults or attributes, that you really are a real person. And I think think about Oprah or other celebrities. We watch her journey with her weight, or we watch her relationships or things like that. We watch these people, and what endears them to us is that, or us to them, is that we feel like they're a real person and we can connect with them rather than some absolutely perfect human form that we could never hope to be. And those are the people that really rise to extreme levels.
Yeah, that's great point and well said. And I think when you can look in the mirror and say that you love yourself no matter what, with all of the flaws, with all of the positive attributes, and that you could always, I always say, as long as your moral compass is right, it doesn't matter. You know, exterior, we can all be prettier, smarter, or thinner. I mean, you know, and I work very hard, I think, on the self-care aspect of myself. But that doesn't mean anything. It pales in comparison to really who you are as a person internally. And I think when you can be a role model for others and always try to do the right thing and treat people the way you want to be treated, but not just say that, mean it, I think there's something attractive about a human being like that. And I think in any format, whether it's one-on-one or on television, when you are authentic and you are real, I think people are, it's like a magnet. People are very attracted to you. And I think it's a great way to be. And I'm very attracted to people that are of like mind. So I think that being who you are is something to be proud of, and never to hide your imperfections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's just so beautiful. It's beautiful to hear you say it, especially somebody like yourself who is on TV, who is out there in a very public way, and is yet not afraid to say, this is me, sort of take me or leave me, I'm a real person, I love myself regardless, you know, I do some things great, I do some things not so great, but it's just part of the package. And for other women to see that and be like, you know, there's parts of me that are great, and ideally we can own those, but also there's parts of me that aren't so great, and that is completely okay. I think you're really being a role model in that way. And like you said, I think people are attracted to that, like a magnet, where there's something about genuineness and realness that we can feel from another person, and it is very attractive.
Yeah, Kendra, you know, I think what people also need to understand is we're not born this way. I think we evolve from experiences and our family experiences, the way we're raised, and hopefully the good morals that are instilled in us. And sometimes you have to really go out there and want to be a better human being. And I think it's something that gets lost in translation, just like a marriage is work, and you go to work and it's work, and you have to put in the time and the effort and the hours. I think you have to put in the time for yourself, because if you don't, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. And what I mean by the work in yourself is whatever makes you empowered, what makes you learn how to make solid decisions in all areas of your life. And I do a lot of reading, and I take time for myself and things that I never, ever did in my life. But recently have learned that unless I take that, I have that self-care and be a little selfish, I never realized that it's okay to take some time for yourself. I think we all need to recuperate from working hard and balancing family life and kick back and do what makes you happy and what pleases you. And if that's going on a hike or listening to music or getting a massage, you know, those are the things that I think you need to recharge your batteries. And many women in the industry, I think, don't do that enough. And they feel as though, oh, you know, everyone else comes first before them. But really, I think it's a lesson for people to learn that they need to make themselves number one.
I completely agree. I'm a huge proponent of self-care. And again, I think it's one of those things, like you said, it almost feels like an oxymoron that you're being selfish. You know, we're trying to serve other people, and yet here I am feeling selfish for taking an hour to go get a massage or taking a bath or going and reading by myself because it's beautiful outside. But those are the things that keep us sane and keep us at the top of our game, really, both professionally, that we're mentally alert and fully present, but also with our loved ones, with, you know, friends and family, spouses, children, whoever it may be, that we can really show up in the best way possible is when we fill our cup, so to speak, not let it run dry.
Yes, very true. And I think one of the things that I've realized in terms of technology and multitasking, because I think females such as ourselves probably do so many things at one time, I've read some studies that it's really not so great for the brain. And sometimes I tell people, I feel like I'm short-circuiting. I really feel like I'm having a meltdown. I mean,
yeah.
I really can't be as articulate as I would like, and I can't really give the people around me the attention that I need to. So I've started in terms of putting down my BlackBerry and literally not checking it every 5 seconds and listening to people talk and giving them eye contact and really being present, because I think without those qualities in relationships, we don't have them, we lose them. And then how do we have quality time with people if we're not even paying attention to what they're saying and what they're doing? So that's something that I'm starting to implement more and more, and I hope I can get better at it as time progresses.
Well, and I think, as you said, I wanted to draw out this point too, because it's so important that it's not as if you wake up one morning and think, I'm going to be emotionally and spiritually mature starting right now, and snap, you are. I mean, there's work to be done, and it's, I mean, this, and I agree with what you're saying. It's taken me a long time and really just a few years here where I sort of felt like something was missing. Like, I needed to do the reading. I needed to do the work. I needed to do the self-discovery, which is not always a pleasant process, sort of muddling through your own ick, but it's how you get to that next place, and it's never ending. I mean, I would never say, and I'm definitely something you would never say, like, oh, I am the pinnacle of having it togetherness, but it's sort of being on the journey, at least. I mean, it's a progress, but it takes, I mean, and sounds like you're sort of a bookie too. Like, I go to the library with my daughters, and I come out with literally armfuls. Like, my daughters have to go get me bags to carry the books. Like, and they're all self-help. They're all.
I'm addicted. You know what? We talk about addictions. I mean, and I guess it's a good thing, but I am addicted. If I, you know, it's like been about 2 weeks where I haven't read a good book, and I ordered a grouping of them last week, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I started rereading some of the books that I have. I don't want to lose this kind of push and this muster that I've created in the sense of growth. And I think it is. It's progression, it's growth, it's self-discovery. The journey is not always easy. Like in anything, when you want to face really the truth, it's hurtful sometimes, mm-hmm. but it always makes individuals better. With my clients, I've seen it in my personal life, with family members and friends. When you are willing to put in the time to improve yourself, there is no better reward than living a peaceful, tranquil life. And with the hecticness that happens along with anybody who's practicing law, who has children, going through a divorce, what have you, it's very difficult to have peace and be at peace with who you are and what you stand for. But when you get to that point, at least closer than you were, to me, you can't put a price tag on it. And, you know, this is coming from a person who, once I sit down, I fall asleep because my energy level is so high and I have to do so much in a day. So I used to be that person that didn't have peace and didn't know how to relax. And I think it is an amazing proposition when you actually find it.
It's so true. And having to do the work, but that it's so worth it in the end. You know, it's just kind of like exercise. You know, you say you want six-pack abs, but you hate to do sit-ups. Well, you know, it's kind of, you've got to pay your dues, and it's not always pleasant, but there's one way to get there. And sometimes it is just putting in the work. And when we do that work of self-discovery and of figuring out who we are and what wonderful things we bring to the table, the attributes that we have, and then, like you said, it deepens our practice with our clients. It deepens our relationship with our loved ones. It gives us a sense of that inner peace and that contentment that once you sort of touch it or, you know, just taste it, maybe you don't have it 100% all the time because, again, we're still growing and learning, but just sort of knowing that it can be that way, you wouldn't want to go back. But there it is a challenge, and I just resonate with what you're saying about being exhausted at the end of the day. I always joke, I tell my husband, it's hard to be me because it's intense. Like, I eat a lot and I sleep a lot, and it's just, I sort of burn hot.
Right, and I think it's your moral compass, it's your makeup, it's how your body flows, it's how your brain works, and I think that it's a good thing. And I really, from, you know, you sound amazing and you sound like you have really been through the trenches. And I think you can only speak to these points when you have experienced some pain and lots of pleasure. And you can never stop, because when you stop and think, oh, I've done all the work and I'm perfect now, you do fall backwards. You do go back into some of these old cycles, and you never want to go backwards. You always want to go forward. So I think it's also that daily ritual of whatever somebody wants to do to make them feel better. I have intentions. And for me, that's something that really works well, to reinstill on a daily basis how grateful I am for everything that I've accomplished and all of that to come, and then also the things that I want in life, my hopes and dreams and goals that I hope to aspire to and obtain. And I think that that's changed a big part of who I am.
The intention setting?
The intentions, mm-hmm. the being grateful. You know, when you have mm-hmm. gratitude, it elevates you in a way that I think is unspeakable. And it's, you know, even when things go wrong, or at least in your mind, your perception is something's going wrong or a meeting was canceled, it's always in your highest good. And when you believe that and don't question it and really open up for the universe to provide for anything that you actually want instead of being negative about it, for me, it's changed my mindset. It's changed everything that I stand for. And to believe that everything is happening and unfolding at the right time. And we can't control it. You know, for the people that are A-type personalities, and I would call myself a slight control freak in many ways, which I'm trying to work on, I can't control how my life, I can only control my behavior. I can't control much else. And I think once you realize that, it's kind of empowering, because you can kind of, the pressure's off. Let the, you know, pave the way. Whoever is going to be doing it and whatever God you believe in, let it happen.
That's right. It is so freeing, and you don't have to sit around and worry about why is this happening and oh, poor me and everything. I mean, there's certainly times in our lives and situations that happen that are really challenging and really difficult, and it sounds sort of Pollyanna-ish to sit around and think, oh, well, what's the blessing in this, or why is this good? And we may be able to figure it out right away, and we may not, because we might not realize the lesson for weeks or months or years until we look back at that situation and be like, oh, I see now why that was for my highest good, why that was the perfect thing to happen, even though in the moment it was bad, bad, bad,
right.
and terribly uncomfortable, but in the big scheme of things, it was good. But it is freeing, and it just, you sort of can let go and breathe a sigh of relief when those things happen and move on a lot quicker rather than sitting there. And to go back to your gratitude point, I think that's what a lot of it is about, is just being grateful. And ideally, most of the things life throws at you are going to be good things that you can really genuinely be grateful for, but like you said, once in a while, things are thrown at you that you don't quite know how or why to be thankful, but you can trust that in some bigger way, there's something in there to have gratitude for.
Right, and I think the wasting energy on why and woe is me and poor me doesn't serve your purpose. It doesn't serve it at all. It does nothing for you. You need to move on. We have bad days. We have good days. But you know what? You're breathing. You're alive. And I think when you focus on those positive attributes that you have and what you want to accomplish in your life, your creative juices continue to flow, and I just think you strive for success. And there's nothing like it, you know, to acquire whatever you want to acquire. I mean, it's, you know, to me, it's planting a garden. I don't have a green thumb, and if I planted a garden, I'd be ecstatic. You know, it doesn't have to be getting on television, but whatever your personal goals are as a female, I think are amazing. And I always tell people, you know, they say to me, how could you do so much, or you have so much going on? And I don't have that same drive, and I always say, look within, you do. You do. If you're the best mother possible, I mean, I'm blown away by women that have children. I don't, and hopefully one day I will. But that's an accomplishment, and people shouldn't underestimate it. So I think everybody has, whatever their goals are in life, they should never be afraid to go after them.
Exactly. Exactly what you said. Success looks different for every person. What looks like success to me might not to you or to someone else, or maybe it does, but at a different point in our lives or something else. But it's very much personal and individual. And when we can stop comparing, you know, and we said that kind of earlier, that who cares really what other people think? It's about what we decide matters in our lives and what we want our lives to look like. To your point of setting intentions, figuring that out, I mean, I think that's the first step in it too, is sometimes we don't even know what we want and we're just sort of blindly chasing things, but really getting clear about what does that success look like. Maybe that is being a great mom, and kudos to you. And hopefully no one feels judged because maybe they left the practice of law or they, you know, left their professional career, whatever it is. Kudos to you for deciding that that was what you wanted to do and doing a bang-up job at it. And so it's very individual. When we can stop looking at other people and sort of coulda, shoulda, woulda, and feeling like we're less than, but instead embrace who and what we are, that's when we have that contentment and that gratitude that gives us peace.
Absolutely. And when you remove the word fear from your vocabulary, there are no regrets. And they're just lessons learned. And I always say God's delays are not God's denials. And, you know, sometimes you try for something, you don't get it, and you think, my gosh, then maybe this is a sign I shouldn't do it. And then this is just a bump in the road, and it's just not the right timing. And I think the word fear is something that's so ingrained in so many people that I know about trying just to get to the next level. And, you know, I always tell people, what's the worst thing that's going to happen to you? I mean, are you going to get killed? No, of course not. So you make a mistake. You learn from it. That's growth. That's real personal growth. So that's something that I believe in wholeheartedly. And I've always, you know, understood that fear held me back in many, many ways. And once I came face to face with that terrible, terrible emotion, I mean, to me, it doesn't exist. We always have trepidation. We would be nervous, perhaps, or concerned, but fear does not exist. I believe it's a self-made emotion that holds us back from our true capacity for as women, and as really women who can succeed and do anything that they put their mind to.
It's so right, and I actually just want to share, because as you're saying that, I have a candle on my desk here, and it has this little saying, and it says, beyond fear, because I am so the same. Fear is something that just stopped me for years and continues to sort of bubble up from time to time, but now I know a little bit better what to do with it, and I can acknowledge it, and I can just let it go, because I recognize how it stopped me in the past for no good reason. Like you said, it's completely internally created. But so I actually bought a candle that says beyond fear on it, and I'll just read a quote on it because it touched me as you were saying that. It says, when I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it will become less and less important whether I'm afraid.
And fabulous.
I know, I just had to read it because it was just such a perfect tie-in to what you were saying, because when we can get beyond that fear, then all of a sudden we can open up to all the fabulous things that we were created to do, that we have the power to do, that we let fear stop us, that we can get beyond that and do so many things, and then it just doesn't matter. The fear doesn't matter anymore.
Right, it doesn't. It's just a self-created, subconscious, I think, mental block that we create based upon our experiences and our upbringing. And I think it's something that when people understand it's really a facade, then they can kind of go out and be strong and believe in themselves and not take rejection, not take what everybody else says. You could never do this. I love when people say to me, oh, you could never do that. I it empowers me in the strangest way possible, because I don't know what, you know, nobody's God. Nobody knows what anybody can do, what their capability is. And, you know, when people say, oh, you know, TV executives don't like to talk about divorce, it's a scary topic, and people really don't create these shows. And I always say to myself, I'll have a show about this one day. And, you know, you got to believe.
That's
if
right.
You don't believe in yourself, who will believe in you?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that, it goes back to that. Just being confident and loving yourself and being your biggest fan, your number one fan, should be right there inside you.
Right, and people don't understand it. You know what? Having inner confidence, it has nothing to do with being cocky. It has everything to do with your self-belief that you will execute. And anytime I'm on television, I tell everybody, I'm going to always speak my truth. I'll never say something I don't agree with, and I will give you my best, and I will always prepare as much as I can. That I can guarantee. And that's confidence, because that's knowing that you will give 110% because they're choosing you. And I think you can kind of use that in any aspect of your life. Also, somebody yesterday was at an art gallery, and somebody pointed out this sign that somebody had actually placed on this portrait. And I thought it was amazing, and it's probably pretty appropriate here. And it basically said, we have three lives, one that we live, one that we dream, and one we remember. And I kept thinking about it and thinking, what does that mean? Okay, and from what I have surmised from it is that you need to live your life and do whatever makes you happy and the people around you happy and making a difference and making a mark on this world. And you can dream about things all you want, but the ones you remember are really the ones that you actually live and doing it and just do. And that's something for the individuals that will be on your site and listening to you and reading about you. It's very important to never compromise your beliefs, ever.
It's so true. Going back to what you said about just having that strong moral center, that, you know, living within your own ethics and your own integrity, I think it really, when push comes to shove, at the end of the day, that's what you've got. And that's what allows you to sleep at night and keep moving. And if you deviate from that, things can get pretty dicey. But if you can stay grounded in that, it just provides such a strong foundation for everything else.
Right, absolutely. I think the focus has always got to be on your game plan and your journey and really setting your goals for 1 year, 5 years, and 10 years out, and really determine what you want your life to look like. And one day when you're gone, what did people say about you? What was your reputation? Did you make a difference in this world or for your children as role models? You know, we're all put on this earth for some purpose. And I think when you realize what your purpose is, and I think many people have many different purposes, it's just great to be alive and to wake up every morning and to breathe in the fresh air. It could always be worse. And, you know, go about your day in a focused fashion.
It's so true. When you think, we can look back on your life, and I encourage my clients, I think I call it legacy, same sort of thing. You know, your reputation, what do you want to leave behind? you know, if you were gone, or, you know, at the end of your life, if it was your 80th birthday party or your 90th or your 100th, whatever you want it to be, what, and you had people stand up and talk about you, what would you want them to say? Or at your funeral, you know, what do your children stand up and say? What does your spouse stand up and say? What does, what do your colleagues, your friends, your community members, what do they say about you? What kind of life did you live? And when you're really in touch with those values and that moral center, you can, if you're living those out, you can imagine that they're going to be saying the things that would make you very proud to hear about yourself.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I always get choked up, even in the introduction when you were talking about my bio, and I feel so humble and blessed to even take part in so many of the things that I do. I always feel like I want to cry when I hear somebody say some of the accomplishments, because it's very difficult to look in the mirror and say, wow, I've done all these things, because there's so many things that I want to do. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion, for me personally. But for me, it makes me happy that my family can kind of be along with the journey, and they're very proud. And that's more important than for me than really, you know, my personal accomplishments. But I think everyone just needs to know that set your mind to it and you can do it.
Yeah, it's so empowering, your story. I mean, just your story, and also yet to see your humbleness in that, because people could easily look at your bio. I looked at your bio, I'm like, wow, she's just flying high. It's amazing. It's really terrific, and I'm genuinely happy for you. And yet then to connect with you and get to talk with you and see the spirit of someone who, of course, has accomplished all these things and is completely terrific in what she does, and yet has that humble spirit and a giving spirit, it's so refreshing. And it can be that way. I think sometimes we stereotype people and think, oh, well, they're on TV or they're on the radio, they must be really snooty or really full of themselves. And quite the opposite. I think we do a disservice to other people just assuming those things about them. And I think we use it as an excuse, potentially, to say, I wouldn't want to turn out like them. I bet I'm not going to even dream that for myself, because we think these people have attributes, and we let it stop us and think, oh, well, you know, I wouldn't want to be that person. But like you said, you can, if you dream it, you can do it, but to do it from that spirit.
Yeah, it's I think coming from a place that there's always going to be better, worse, or indifference around you, never to be apathetic, and to really strive for a sense of contentment within yourself. Success, to reach for the stars. I always say to reach for the moon, the stars. And I was raised, you know, you could be anything you want. The president of the United States, as a female, my mother used to tell me, you can do anything you want as long as you work hard. And I am not the smartest person on America, you know, that was born here. I'm not Einstein by any stretch of the imagination, and probably not as smart as most people perhaps in my profession. But when you have hard work and you have passion and dedication to anything that you do, I think that's the difference between mediocrity and superstardom. And I always believe that you surround yourself with people of like mind and that who have the same motivation. And the people that I work with and the people that I meet in the industry, I always want to befriend them, because I you learn from people and you want to better yourself. So I think those are some of the major lessons I've learned along the way in the TV and industry, and really in the legal profession for me, because so many people are content with just doing their 9-to-5 work and going home and not making a difference. And that's okay. If that's the life you want to lead. But I always hear from people that that's not really where they want to be. They want to make a difference. They want to do more. Sometimes they don't know how. Sometimes they're afraid. Sometimes they feel guilty that it takes away from their home life. So I think people just really need to realize that you can have that balance. Mm-hmm. If you focus and surround yourself with people that are inspiring.
Well, and there's role models. I mean, that's what these interviews are about, or everything at Women Lawyers Online, and I mean, certainly out there in the world, there's people we can learn from. Back to our book addiction. I mean, how many biographies are there out there of people? I mean, you can even just go online and find people that you can learn from, or read their books, or read books written about them, and go back and just draw deep from that well of experience and knowledge. We don't have to do it all on our own, but with the learning available to us, or just like you said, just asking people that you encounter that you say, wow, you've really got it going on, and I want a little piece of what you've got. How did you get there? And ask the question, and people love to talk, and they want to share, and they want to shortcut your path to success. So just ask for it instead of thinking, oh, I could never, ever do that. Just ask, because they put on their pants one leg at a time, too, you know? They probably have to work hard to get there. They can tell you.
It's very true, and it's funny. I did that this morning. I had a host email me at 5:30 this morning thanking me for coming on air on Friday and giving me a really nice compliment. And I emailed her back, and I said, you know, thank you. It's coming from you. It's such a high honor. But I also wanted to ask you a couple questions and pick your brain about the industry. You know, when can we go out? Because I'm always learning and growing, and this industry is such a fickle place to be, and she has much more experience than I, so I'd love to find out what kind of guidance she could offer me or, you know, in any capacity. So I think you're right, you have to ask, and I also think you also have to say no, not in this context, but something that I've always been very bad at. Yes, 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 without thinking. I'll kill myself and drive up and down the state for anybody, and sometimes you have to kind of self-reflect and say, listen, if this isn't going to be good for me, then I'm going to have to say no. And I don't know too many people that are really good at saying no that are perfectionists or people that strive for ultimate success.
That it's true. I think I'm definitely guilty of saying too many yeses, and that's been and it comes, I hope, at least most of it, some of it probably has other little roots in people-pleasing and all those things we talked about earlier, but it comes from a spirit of giving, because like you said, when people ask you, you want to give, but sometimes to protect your own self and your own energy, you need to say no, or maybe there's a win-win, you know, maybe it's a phone conversation instead of lunch, you know, or something, but being mindful of your own time and your own boundaries while you are staying true to wanting to be of service and wanting to be giving what you can to others. There's a fine line there, and it's a tricky line to navigate. I'm definitely not always the best at it, but I try. And I think it's again that maturation or that growing process of figuring out where your own line is and how you can navigate around it and try not to overstep it more than absolutely necessary.
Right, very true. And I think some of the things that I've learned along the way is to, if somebody asks me to do something, my natural reaction is always yes. So now what I do is, you know what, let me get back to you. I need to check my schedule, and I'll make sure that I get back to you within the next couple hours. So then I can think about it, and how does it really affect me in one day? Because if I look at my calendar, just as I'm on the phone now with you, it's all red. I mean, you know, you have things going on from day till night, and sometimes you can't fit people in. And it's okay to say, listen, I'll call you later. Let's get on email. You know, we can Skype. There's always other ways around helping people, but to not react quickly, to say that yes, if that's your type of personality. Certainly, if you're a person that says no all the time, you don't have this problem. But most people that are pleasers, that want other people to like them, and really believing that their other people's opinions really do matter, those are the types of individuals that really need to think about reacting and waiting to answer a question in the positive until you really figure out if it's something that you can really handle or not and if it suits you. I mean, I've never really thought about if anything suited me. It was always about the other person, and that's not what self-care is about.
That's right. It's so true. Just figuring out what works for you, what suits you, what's a good fit, what you can really, like you said, do your best at, because there's things you get asked to do that you're like, well, I could do that, but I don't know that I'm even the exactly right person for you, and I don't know that I could give you as good a job as somebody else could maybe. So maybe, you know, I'll give a suggestion for somebody else who might even be a better fit, because I don't want to give my what's my best, but my best, it might just be outside of my specialty. It might be outside of my skill set, my core strengths, and to be honest about that with someone too. But I love what you're saying about taking some time before making the yes and just sitting with it for a second to make sure it's a good fit, because sometimes we feel like we have to give an instant answer, and yet a lot of times people aren't even expecting that. They don't mind giving you a couple hours to check your planner. Or I also use my husband as an excuse. I'm like, let me check with my husband, you know, right, see what he's got on his planner. It's true, I need to, but it also gives me a moment to take a breath and say, does this really work? And he's usually my bad cop, where he'll be like, do you really have time to do that? I'll be like, no, I don't. It's like, think what you're giving up to do. He's just good to me. But, I mean, he needs to ask me those questions that I could ask myself as well.
Right. And I think you always need that individual that's going to complement the strengths and weaknesses that you have. And when you do take the time to think about it, it's okay to say no. And if somebody's going to be disappointed with you, it happens. And I always say, I'll always try to help people no matter what. And I get maybe 10 calls a day or maybe even in a given week from people that are asking for some guidance or help. And I will always try to help them. If it's not my area of expertise, as you just mentioned, I'll always give them a contact, a lead to somebody else. But, you know, not always are you the panacea for everybody. And when you're doing a favor, that's exactly what it is. It's a favor. It's a pro bono favor for somebody. And you don't have to do them every single day of your life and every waking minute. Trust me, if I was so extremely wealthy, I would probably be doing charity work every minute of my life because that's what I love to do. That gives me the most sense of happiness, and I know that I'm giving back. But again, that's not reality. So I think if everybody kind of comes down to reality, organizes their schedules and said to people when they ask, I'll get back to you. Would love to, just not sure if I can work it into my schedule, but I'll let you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, just show them that you care enough to even check. I think that, I mean, that's giving them respect and respecting their request. And then, you know, doing the best you can with that request, even if it is just a referral or something else, if you can't serve them to your highest ability. Vicki, I hate to say it, but I just looked at the clock, and I just feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours, and I'm suddenly very mindful of the time. I'm like, oh, my goodness, look at that. But I wanted to give you a chance before we jump off. If I know you've got some websites out there and some other information just so people could connect with you or learn more about what you're up to. Could you share that, please?
Sure. People can go on VickiZiegler.com, VickiZiegler.com. I have a great blog, and I talk about all current events that affect people in relationships and divorce. And all of my videos I try to upload and articles that I'm quoted in or that I've written. So that's a great source for people. And DivorceDating.com is my other website. It's for singles, people that have been divorced or widowed. And they can go on it, and they can look for love. They can look for companionship. And they can also find resource experts on the page as well. If there's an issue that they want to talk to a psychologist about, we have some amazing people online that are also on television that are open and willing to work with people. So those are the two sites that everybody can go to. And if anybody's looking to email me a question, they can certainly go on my website, VickiZiegler.com, and they can find me.
Excellent. Oh, thank you so much. And it sounds like divorce dating, again, it has that resource of people where, you know, you can find the person that's the best fit for the need that you have rather than just, you know, hoping that a person has a general set of skills. There are people out there with very specific sets of skills who can suit your needs and answer your questions.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. Well, Vicki, it has been just delightful. I like I said, I could just go on forever and ever, but you've given so much of yourself and your time, and I appreciate it so much. I know people listening will also appreciate it as well. So a huge heartfelt thank you to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It really was a pleasure, and you're an inspiration for women all over the country.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and you too. You too. It's just lovely to connect with you. Well, and with that being said, we'll wrap up this conversation. It's been a delightful time, and I hope that folks who are listening or reading these words will find all sorts of gems that will be a blessing to them and that they can integrate into their life and into their practice of law to make both better. And so with that, this is Kendra Brodine of WomenLawyersOnline.com wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you so much for being here. Bye-bye.